Hey mamas, it's Megan here from the VBAC Link. You know how finding the right VBAC supportive provider can truly make all the difference. Well, finding the right diaper is sometimes just as tough. When searching for a supportive provider, check out our supportive provider list linked in the show notes. And when searching for quality diapers made with clean ingredients, reach out to Coterie. Their diapers are ultra absorbent, they can help minimize leaks and diaper rash, and are made with clean, hypoallergenic materials. It's one less thing to stress about. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout to get 20% off your order of $40 or more. You can find them by checking out the link in the show notes or going to coterie.com. That's C-O-T-E-R-I-E.com. Hello, women of strength. We have another amazing story for you today. And actually, it's stories. We have a VBAC after two C-section mama coming your way. And as you know, this is a hot topic because lots of people want to know if vaginal birth after two cesareans is possible. So Kelsey will be sharing her stories with us today. But guess what, you guys? I have a co-host today, and it's Tara. Hello, Tara Van Dyke.
Hello.
She is one of our VBAC Link doulas. As you probably heard back in 2024, we are going to randomly be having co-hosts from our VBAC Link doulas. I think it's so awesome to have them on. I love hearing their topics and things that they want to suggest to, you know, talk to you guys about. Because again, just like we talked about years ago, we here just in Salt Lake City, Utah, can't share enough. And so we want other doulas from all over the world to share as well. So Tara, tell us more about one, where you're from, and then your topic on partners and being prepared.
Yes. So thank you for having me here with you. This is so fun to hear a story live. And I'm a doula working in the Chicagoland suburbs. I've been doing that for 20 years and now kind of moving to more of childbirth education as well as like a lower caseload of doula work. Partly because I just welcomed my first grandchild this week.
Yay!
And so I want to be available in a different way in my life. So do a lot of childbirth education. But along the way, what's always been really important to me and I feel really passionate about is the partner connection with the person giving birth and their preparation. And the research supports it too, that a prepared partner makes a really big difference in outcomes too. And I know we talk a lot about doulas and you know, increasing the positive outcomes of birth. And that's been shown over and over in studies, but the actual dream team is a doula and a prepared partner.
Yeah.
Love because that. Partners, and I tell the dads that come to my classes that the doula is important, but we are replaceable in this situation, but the partner is so important because of that connection, because they bring the oxytocin, they bring the safety, they have that history with you already. And what even bumps that up to being really helpful in the birth room is their preparation and their understanding of what to expect and being completely on board. So there's lots of ways for partners to get prepared, but they kind of get left out a lot. So I feel really strongly that partners are so much better in the birth room when they're not feeling anxious about what's going on, when they know what to expect and they have a few good tools in their pocket for how to help.
Oh, yes. I could not agree more. I always talk about, I make things up and I call it the doula sandwich. So it's just what I call it in my practice of my doula work. And because one bun has all the oxytocin and all the knowledge of who you are. And then the other side is the doula who has the education in birth work and the ideas of how to help navigate through the birth space, but also can then support the partner in doing that, educating the partner. So then, you know, we've got two really great sides and then we sandwich the doula.
Two great buns.
We have great buns. We have really great buns and we sandwich that mom together and with love and support and education and oxytocin. And like you said, it really creates that dream team. And so I love that so much. And, you know, my husband didn't educate himself. He was just like, okay, fine. If you want a VBAC, go do it. You do the research. Right. And yeah. I did hypnobirthing with my cousin who luckily was pregnant around the same time, but I did that together, and he just really didn't know. And so when I told him, hey, I want to VBAC after two cesareans out of the hospital, he was like, yo, what? You know, because he was uneducated.
Yeah.
But I truly feel that it is so powerful. And that's why I encourage partners to take the VBAC course with, you know, the mom, or an education course in childbirth, you know, really understand what the mom is going through, but also know how you can help, because I do feel like a lot of those dads kind of get shoved aside, and it's like they want to help, but they don't know how to help, you know, and they don't really know what's going on. And is that noise good or is that noise bad?
Yes. Yeah. And they're going through the birth too. This is the birth of their child. So they can also feel, you know, as far as traumatized, hopefully not trauma, but they can feel a lot more dissatisfied or upset by birth if they didn't know that what was happening was normal. So it's good for them too, to learn how to take care of themselves as well as their partner.
Love it so, so much. Everybody, get your partners educated. It is so, so important. Thank you so much for that tip. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Miss Kelsey, it is your turn, my love.
Okay, so as you know, I had a VBAC after two C-sections, which I didn't even know was a thing. And you played such a huge part in giving me education and, you know, the motivation to pursue this. So my story starts in October 2018. My husband and I found out we were pregnant with our first. It was really special because it was actually our two-year wedding anniversary. It was that morning that we found out, and we had a special trip planned, like to Niagara Falls, just up in Canada. Just a special place for us. It's where he proposed to me. And it was just a really special time. It was also kind of crazy because up until that point, up until just prior to that, we had been together 8 years and we didn't think we were interested in having kids. I'm so grateful that our mindset had shifted, but it was just kind of a lot at once. You know, we had agreed that we did want to start a family, but it kind of happened really quickly. And it was just a lot to process. So I didn't educate myself at all about birth. My husband and I took a class in the hospital, but it was pretty much just how do you take care of a baby? It wasn't how to bring a baby into the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes those can be like a little more what to expect after than really what to expect during.
Exactly. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if I just, you know, couldn't really picture myself giving birth just because, you know, we had just kind of come into this, or if I just was not believing in my body, but I just kind of felt the opposite of a lot of people on this podcast. They say, I never thought I would have a C-section. I never expected that for myself. And for me, I just kind of went into it thinking, I'm kind of intimidated by all of this. A C-section kind of sounds easier. And I'm saying that now, but I just thought, you know, not having to go through labor and not having to push a baby out, you know, I just kind of always had that in my head. And that kind of comes into play with how my first ended up. I was told throughout my pregnancy that my baby was big, and specifically, it was driven home, you know, the head is big, the shoulders are big. And they were just telling me about shoulder dystocia, and I didn't know anything, you know? So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, not only am I already intimidated by the idea of birth, I know nothing about birth, but now you're telling me I have this big baby. And so my OB was really, you know, telling me maybe a C-section should be considered. And then she kind of threw it out there, well, we could induce at 39 weeks and kind of see if things, how things go. And again, I was just trusting her. She had been my gynecologist since I was a teenager. So I just, you know, to me, I thought, okay, that makes sense. Baby's big. And again, hadn't done any research on my own. So we did what I refer to as a half-hearted induction. I feel like it was kind of just done to like humor everyone, like, oh, we tried. But I went in the night before at 39 weeks on the dot. Nothing was going on with my cervix. Surprise, surprise, at 39 weeks. And they did Cervidil, and I just, you know, lay in the bed. My husband and I watched the fireworks out the window. It was the 4th of July. And we just, you know, just completely not prepared for anything, just going along with this and kind of thinking, oh, we'll just have a C-section tomorrow if this doesn't happen. And they came in the morning and nothing had happened. So they were like, oh, well, we could start Pitocin. We could do this. I just wasn't interested in any of that. I just wasn't motivated to have a vaginal birth. And I've, you know, I guess that's okay. That's just where my head was at the time. And I've accepted, you know, that's just where it was at. So we had the C-section. It was, you know, it was a surgery, just being there. And as baby comes out, just hearing everybody in the OR talk about, you know, oh, look at her cheeks and look at the hair. And, but, you know, minutes before I'm ever able to get a quick flash of her around the curtain before they swoop her off. So it was just a weird experience, but it was all I knew. And, you know, I was grateful that it went okay, but it just makes recovery so hard, you know, so painful. And like, when I think back to it, I just think about just crying while my husband's trying to do my abdominal binder, not being able to get in and out of bed, struggling to breastfeed, even like getting in a position to breastfeed with that searing surgical pain. We struggled and I ended up exclusively pumping. So it was tough, you know, as a first time mom, just dealing with all of that. But again, I didn't know any different. And I think that was kind of a blessing, as I didn't know what I was potentially missing. So for my second birth, we knew we wanted more than one child. And, you know, you just never know how things are going to happen. So we just weren't trying to not get pregnant. And it happened like right away. So the babies were 16 months apart. So when I showed up to my appointment, my OB, the same one who had said, you know, you have this big baby and you should have a C-section or induce 39 weeks. Oh, the arrive study was hot off the press at that point too. So he was very excited to show me the arrive study, you know, back.
Oh yeah. But you're not even a first, I mean, you are a first time vaginal mom, but oh, so funny. The arrive trial. If you know, you've been with us, hashtag eye roll. Yeah.
Yeah. It's changed yeah. Everything.
It really has. And not, I don't know if it really has changed for the better, in my opinion, but.
Oh, sorry. That was for my first birth. I forgot to mention.
Oh, sorry. Yes. That would make sense. Yes.
So with the second, you know, same OB, and she's like, mm-hmm. Okay, so since your births are so close together, you'll just be a repeat C-section. You can make all the appointments with me and I'll do your surgery. Easy peasy. And I'm thinking, oh, like, okay, you know, that makes sense, because she's talking about uterine rupture and they're so close together. And I didn't research on my own. Like, is there another option, or how risky really is this compared to a repeat C-section? I just trusted her so much. She had with her for so long. I figured she must have my best interests at heart and not, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't even think to myself, my own mother had a VBAC with a 13-month age gap. I was a C-section and my brother was VBAC at 13 months, 30 years ago. So, you know what you know at the time. And so even though I didn't look into it, you know, in the ways that I should have, I did know that I wanted the experience to be a little different. So I had found out about gentle C-sections, which I think is a funny term, but
I know.
I was happy to see that you could request a clear drape and you could request, you know, not to be tied down to the table. So we did implement a few of those things. I had the clear drape. It was nice to see her coming out just for a quick flash, you know, and before they swooped her away. You know, it was nice not to be completely, I had like one arm free, which is funny, these things that we consider luxuries when you're having a C-section. So it was a little bit better in that way, but there were, you know, things that were also worse, like they couldn't get the needle and they had a resident doing things. And so, and then I was having trouble. I was kind of starting to pass out during, and they were having to adjust. So it was stressful in its own way. So I had some things that were a little better, but also it's a C-section. Also during, my OB made a comment as she has me completely open, you know, all, what is it? 7 layers of me. She said,
yeah.
Who was it that did your last C-section? And I told her, and she made no comment. And I said, why are you asking me this as you're inside my uterus? And she said, there's just more scar tissue than I would have expected. And she said, hey, you can have another baby if you want, but just wait more time in between, just not so close together. So that was kind of something that got in my head too.
So earlier we talked about how Coterie diapers are incredibly absorbent and minimize leaks. But let me tell you a little bit about their comfort. These diapers are made with ultra soft apparel grade materials that can help keep your baby comfortable all day and night. You will feel the difference. Well, your baby will also feel the difference. Plus, the hypoallergenic and free of fragrance dyes and other irritants keep them safe for even the most sensitive skin. Pair that with their seamless subscription service when you can adjust orders via text, and you have the diapering solution that can truly make your life easier. Use code VBAC20, that's VBAC20, at checkout and save 20% off your first order of $40 or more and experience what we're raving about.
Anyway, we thought there was no way we would ever have a third. It was really hard having two under two, you know, recovering from another C-section. It was November 2020. So it was the first COVID winter. It was cold. It was dark. Everything was closed down. Everybody's in masks. It was so depressing. It's like postpartum isn't hard enough. As if two under two isn't hard enough. Then adding COVID and just.
Yeah. Adding zero support, zero resources. Yeah.
Nowhere to get out and do anything. And just, it was a bummer. So anyway, it was a lot. And we thought, no way are we ever going to have three. It was just a hard season. So I donated everything. I put like all my carriers and all my stuff out on the porch and said, you know, come get it to the local moms group. And I just couldn't see myself having a third. Well, then, you know, the years pass and things get easier. You come into an easier season. All of a sudden we're not dealing with diapers and bottles. It's like we could leave the house, you know, things are opening back up. And it's my husband and I had talked about a third and, you know, kind of toyed around with the thought of it, but it's just hard to pull the trigger once you've come into this easy season. The thought of hitting the reset button, intimidating. But all it really took was watching him take down my youngest crib with her. And it was like, okay, like this is something that we want to do. So it was kind of a funny conversation that night. I said, you know, if we were to get pregnant this cycle, we would have a June baby and that would be really nice. So that's what happened. I was pregnant with my third. And that's kind of when I realized, I mean, I had thought about it obviously, but I realized, oh my gosh, I have to have another C-section, a third C-section. Mm-hmm. And something about being years away from it and thinking about, you know, you're all healed, it's been a few years, and to think about them cutting open again and just knowing what that entails, I was just in a whole different headspace. I was thinking, you know, how is there a way that I can avoid this? I just, before my first appointments, kind of just did a quick Google search, vaginal birth after two C-sections, just to see if this was something anybody had done or was doing or was even possible. And I was so excited to see that people were doing this and that it looked like it was actually potentially a good option. So I was thinking, I've got to be the right candidate. I didn't even need those first C-sections. You know, I knew this now, kind of reflecting back.
Yeah.
I had my first screening where they do your intake and they're asking you a bunch of questions. And I had said to the RN, I said, would I be able to maybe have a vaginal delivery after two C-sections? And she was like, oh, you know, they consider it after one, but once you've had two, you're a C-section for life. And so,
oh, geez.
About her saying that and the way that she said it, I went from being, you know, a little bit curious, like, oh, this might be good, to like, no, this is something I'm going to pursue. Like, it just didn't feel right. She didn't know my history. She didn't know why I had my C-sections. So to tell me, oh, no, you need to have a third major surgery for sure. No option.
I love this moment when it brings a fight out in you. Like, I am going to do this now.
So it was just very, like, I'll never forget how I felt at that moment. So I started to have my appointments with the OBs and I would bring it up. They, you know, everything was perfect. What was going really smoothly. So the appointments would be like 2 minutes, you know, and then at the end they'd say, do you have any questions or concerns? And I'd say, yeah, I just, you know, I wanted to see what my options are for delivery. And they're like, well, we decided as a practice to support VBAC after one C-section, but we actually have a policy. It's VBAC after two C-sections.
How did I know that was coming? The policy. Yeah. I swear, every time it's like, we decided as a practice, or as a practice, we, it's always like, created this stupid policy that actually is against evidence-based care, but okay.
And I'm thinking to myself, how, like, so then what do you do? Anyway, I was just kind of mind blown by that. And so then, you know, I went a couple more appointments there. You go like every month and they'd say, any questions? And I'd say, yes, I'm just really not feeling good about the idea of a third C-section. I said, the risks of a third cesarean, you know, intimidate me much more than doing a trial of labor. I said, I've never given my body a chance. I've never, it's not like, you know, I've been through this before and, you know, things went wrong. I've never been given a fair chance. And they would just, they're very nice, you know, but they just look at me and smile and nod and say, well, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And like not even entertain the idea for a second. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, I've got to figure something out. So at that point, when I had talked to a couple providers and they were all very consistent about, nope, not even going to entertain it, I knew something had to change. So I'm kind of reaching out, I'm searching in the local moms group about C-sections. Has anybody had a VBAC after two? It was crickets. Nobody, you know, nobody was responding. I was looking back years trying to find anybody who had done this, you know, in the area. And what I was finding is, no, it's not going to happen in Erie. You need to go to Pittsburgh or, you know, try a home birth. And I'm like, I'm just really not comfortable with a home birth, even though, you know, I know that's a perfect option for plenty of people. It's just
didn't feel right for you.
Yeah, it just wasn't what I was feeling like I wanted to do. So I reached out and I had not known anything about doulas until your podcast. And I hardly even knew what they did before listening. And I just searched, you know, doulas in Erie. And I called the first one I saw, left a message that was probably pretty unhinged, you know, just like, help, what do I do? And is this something I can do? And she called back and it was the first time that I had any validation, you know, at all. Up until then, it was just people telling me no, people telling me policies and not safe. And it was the first time that she really, you know, I was heard. And she said, you know, there is really no reason why your body can't have a chance, you know, like we'll figure this out. So I kept doing my research. I dug really deep and I found a few people that had referred to providers being supportive. So I was reaching out, you know, sending people DMs saying, hey, sorry to be a huge creep, but can you tell me more about your experience? I found out that at the other practice, there were providers that would consider this. So it wasn't looking super promising, but it was better than where I was at. So I kind of took a chance. I switched practices at 28 weeks. Prior to that, I had an amazing appointment at 24 weeks. I had one last appointment at that office with the policy, and he was amazing. If you could have just copied and pasted him, you know, he was just like a midwife. I mean, he was very upset about the policy. He said, how do you even enforce that? He said, what are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do? Strap you down and take you to the OR? I mean, it could be a whole, I wish that he had a podcast episode because he took so much time. He explained to me kind of the history of C-sections and how, in his words, the pendulum has swung so far from, you know, only doing C-sections when they were needed to like, they're safe now, let's do them whenever we can. And he talked about the whole policy thing and how they met as a group. And he said, you know, some of the younger OBs, they haven't, you know, they've only been practicing now that C-sections are so common. They haven't seen, you know, the success. He said, you have just as much of a chance of success as a 20-year-old walking off of the elevator because our C-section rate is so high. You know, you have, you know, just as much of a chance. He laughed at the fact that macrosomia was in my chart, which I forgot to mention my first. She was 9 pounds, 1 ounce. She was big.
Okay. I wanted to ask you though, because they had said, oh, big baby, 16 months apart. Like I wanted to ask, but 9 pounds, 1 ounce, that's actually not like macrosomia. Like that's, it's a bigger baby, but it's not a huge baby.
Exactly. It's not like, you know, 12 pounds, which also people have done, but anyway. So anyway, he put so much wind in my sails and he fully supported me switching. He said, honestly, you know, I think this is great. I think this is the best option for you. You need to go for it. You know, he said, but if you were to stay here, he said you would face nothing but doubt and bullying and scare. You know, he said, if you were my wife, I'd tell you to switch over to this other practice. So that's what I did. And I also forgot to mention in my anatomy scan, the sonographer is going about doing it. And she said, were your other babies big? And I'm like, no, we're not going to start this. You know, I was like already with the big baby comments. So they had me do a growth scan to switch practices. And it was refreshing to be in a place where they entertained the idea. They said that they decided as a practice to follow what ACOG says. But it was also very clear that the difference between support versus tolerance. So although I was that they were entertaining the idea, I still had, you know, 90th percentile and You know, oh, you've never labored before. You don't have a proven pelvis.
Proven pelvis,
Oh, proven pelvis.
There's a lot of eye rolls in this.
And it's like, thank goodness. If again, if it weren't for this podcast, all of those little comments would have swayed me, and I would have said, "What am I doing? You know, listen to all these things they're saying.
Yeah.
This isn't right for me." And oh my gosh, it's just once you know, it's just so hard to like listen to it. You know, the feedback calculator. Oh, let's just type your stuff in and see. And I think it gave me like 50% chance. Oh. Like I don't know. So anyway, I was kind of get back on track, but. My low point was at 32 weeks. It was the provider who, the one who I referred to before as, you know, convincing me that a C-section or induction was right. And then telling me, oh yeah, you'll just be a repeat. We'll schedule it. I was dreading my appointment with her. I knew that I needed to meet with her because she could possibly be the provider who was on call. And I wanted to, you know, tell her what my plan was and kind of assess her thoughts. And I thought that I was invincible because now I knew all these things and I wasn't going to let anything bring me down. Well, that appointment was pretty terrible. She came in hot. She said, you know, you're 32 weeks and baby's 5 pounds, 4 ounces and he's off the charts. And she actually referred to him as massive. She said, he's massive. He's huge. She said, put him in a room with 100 babies and he is enormous. And she said,
enormous.
He's enormous. Oh, and she's comparing him to other babies already.
And he's not even born.
Can I just add a little like tidbit here? Because there's so much talk in your story about this big baby, fear of big babies. And the research has shown that what leads to more problems or interventions in a birth with a big baby is not the actual size of the baby, but the provider's fear of the big baby.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah.
So they're already getting themselves stirred up and nothing's even happened.
Yep.
So discouraged by that, because I had come across those facts too, and looking at the research and looking at what are the real risks of a big baby, and it's actually just the providers. So yeah, she was just, I mean, disgusted with my plan. She said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I really stood my ground. I was so proud of how I like stuck to my guns. And she pulled out all the stops. She just kind of sighed and she said, okay. And then she pulled it out of me as I was kind of trying to justify. I said, you know, we're not sure, you know, how much we want to grow our family. I said, if I have 3 C-sections, I'm not going to want a fourth, you know? And I said, I just think it's worth a try. So she took that and she ran with it. She said, well, for what it's worth, I would rather do 2 more planned C-sections. She said, I would do 2 more planned C-sections on you and I wouldn't bat an eye. She said, I'd rather do that than have you toe lack. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, so again, stood my ground. She went out, she was visibly upset. I was so proud of myself, but then I spiraled that whole day. I kind of just like chipped away at me all day. And, you know, I came home and I had been doing like nightly walks religiously. And that's when I would listen to the VBAC link. And that night I didn't do my walk. I cried in my bed. I just thought, you know, I was just so upset. And I kind of spent the night then like going through the groups I was in, VBAC after multiple cesareans and the VBAC link, searching, you know, big baby, big head circumference, and screenshotting all the success and all the comments to kind of try to like fuel, kind of get back my motivation. So that was definitely the low point, but I did have some great, great meetings with providers. And I was just grateful that where I was living, I was able to find enough support where they would let me go for it. So once I got to like toward the end, you know, there kept being the comments about big baby. I had an OB do my fundal measurement and not tell me what it was. And I said, how's baby measuring? I said, there's a lot of drama about baby being big. And she's like, well, how big were your other two? And I said, they're 9'1" and 8'4" was my second. So she was almost a full pound smaller. And she says, oh, if you push those out, no problem. You don't have anything to worry about. I said, well, that's where the drama is. I didn't push them out. I had C-sections. And she just like, it was like she saw a ghost. She said, oh, well, that is drama. And she was just beside herself. And I say that story specifically because, spoiler alert, she was the one who ended up delivering my baby.
Oh, really?
Kind of give some little preface to that. So she was just, she actually said, well, it is what it is. And she just was very nervous, very upset. And I said, have you never seen a VBAC after 2 C-sections? Have you seen that? She said, well, yeah, but it's usually with people who have birth vaginally before and not with a big baby is what she said.
Oh my gosh.
I just wanted to tell because she was the one who delivered. So anyway, just time went on. And as I got to 39 weeks, you know, I started to stand my ground a little bit more because they wanted to do cervical checks. So they'd say, okay, undress. And the provider and I just was like, no, thank you. I'm good. Again, something I wouldn't have known because I would have been really discouraged if they would have come in and checked me and said, I just know how that got in my head, you know, with the previous appointments, things that I didn't think would affect me. So at 39 weeks, one of the providers who had been kind of trying to talk about how big my baby was and persuade me for an induction, she said, well, what if we did a growth scan at 40 weeks and you were measuring 10 pounds? Like, would that change your mind? I was like, no, I'm not going to do a growth scan at 40 weeks. I've already done too many scans. So just right up until the end, they're just trying to get me to, you know, just talking about the size.
Really trying to get you to cave.
So after that appointment, I had to go because of my BMI. They implemented now after 37 weeks and beyond, you have to have an NST and a BPP, a biophysical profile, every week.
After 37 weeks?
Starting at 37 weeks, you have to have both those tests every week. It's just it was a new thing. I didn't do it with my last. So again, I'm kind of worried about this. But I know how the testing goes. Well, sure enough, this is 39 weeks. I go for the biophysical profile and they're like, oh, there's a lot of fluid. You have too much fluid. I kept talking about all the fluid and look, there's little flakes and just talking about it. And I'm thinking, here we go. You know, I've made it this far and now it's going to be something that makes section. Baby also wasn't taking enough practice breaths for her, which is frustrating because I knew it. She even said, she's like, I think he's sleeping, but I just want to be on the safe side. And I said, I just had an appointment. She could hardly get his heart rate because he was moving so much. I had driven to Cleveland about an hour and a half away the night before to go to a Noah Kahan concert. And like, we were up, you know, I just felt him moving the whole time. It was just, I'm like, I'm pretty confident that he's okay. I was just checked by my OB 5 minutes ago, but she wanted to send me and I wasn't going to mess around, you know, this far on. So I went to triage and they hooked me up to an NST. They wouldn't just let me do it in the office. So I'm sitting there, everything's perfect. The nurse comes in. She said, they're just going to come in and place an IV. And I stopped and I said, what did you say? She said, they're just going to come place an IV. And I said, why would they want to place an IV? Everything's looking good. I have grocery pickup in an hour. I'm not trying to be here. I'm not. And well, just for access. And I said, no, thank you. Like, please give me access. That was weird. So then she said, okay, I'm just going to watch you a little longer. Well, then this OB who I'd never seen before, who was apparently just newer to the practice, comes in and I'm like, how are things going? So at this point, it'd been like 45 minutes. I'm trying to get out. He said, well, things are looking really good. He said, but, and I just see his wheels turning. He's like, since you're 39 weeks and you've had 2 C-sections, we can do a C-section for you today.
Oh my, Lanta.
There you go. How did you manage all this pressure, Kelsey? It's extraordinary.
It is.
And I should mention, I had an amazing doula. So after these appointments, I would text her, like, you know, a paragraph, and she would just was constantly lifting me back up. I also had I was going for the Webster chiropractic care, and the chiropractor I saw, shout out to Tori, she's amazing. She's a doula also. And she was pregnant going for her VBAC. So we would meet, you know, we would have these appointments and it was kind of like a little mini, you know, VBAC therapy session. We'd talk about, you know, what we were up against and just the different providers because she was going to the same practice as me. And it was just so nice to have her. So I was doing all the things, the chiropractic care. I was eating the dates, drinking the tea, because I just wanted to know if I'm doing this, I'm going to try everything. Then I can't look back and say, well, what if I would have, you know, done chiropractic, or what if I would have, you know? So anyway, I basically tell him, you know, get out of my room. I'm going. And he was awful. He, all the scare tactics, all the risks, but none of the risks of a third C-section, of course, only the risks of, you know, the very low risk uterine rupture that he's like, you know, hyping up. So anyway, that was bizarre. But again, I stood my ground and I was so proud, but then I got home and I spiraled and I'm like packing my hospital bag and I'm crying. And I said to my husband, I'm like, you know, I let him get in my head. I was like, I shouldn't even bother packing any of this stuff. You know, I had like the little fairy lights, these things to like labor. I'm like, I shouldn't even bother packing any of this VBAC stuff. They're just going to find some reason to do a C-section. Like, look at this. This whole time, they just want to do a C-section. So again, another night of spiraling. And oh, as he left, he said, well, they're going to want to see you tomorrow and repeat all this testing. And I'm like,
what? For why? If everything was okay, what was the actual medical reason?
Exactly. And it was just out of spite because I shut him down. He was like, well, they're going to want to have you come back tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, if it gets me out of here, you know, and gets you out of my trying to get access to get an IV in and do a C-section.
But seriously.
The next morning, I'm on my way to my appointments and or to my appointment. And I was on the phone with my mom and I told her, I was like, I'm kind of having these weird feelings I've never felt before. I was like, I don't know if maybe they're contractions. It was very strange. It was something I never felt. I never had a contraction, never gone into labor. So I go to my appointment, pass the BPP with flying colors. I'm like, well, what about the fluid? She's like, yeah, there's a lot of it, but you know, it's fine. Got like an 8 out of 8 score. So I go for the NST. Well, now baby's moving too much. So his heart rate, they like can't keep it on because he's moving and she kept having to move it. So again, just very frustrated that I'm even there. You know, I'm so close to the end. This is now 39 weeks and 4 days. And so the tech says, I'm going to bring this to him. She said, he might not like that, like the drop-offs, but I'll explain to him the baby's moving a lot. And I said, who's he? Like, what OB is this? And yeah. She told him the OB that was in triage the day before that tried to have me do the C-section. And I was just like, oh my God, he's going to see my name and, you know, have any reason to send me back. So sure enough, he comes sauntering in the room and he says, we meet again, as if I'm this problem child, as if I wasn't just having all these normal tests. He says, I can't be confident that these aren't D cells. You need to go back to triage. And I was just, you know, again, just so frustrated. It's like what, just constant, you know, all of these things coming up and none of it being real. You know, it'd be different if it was like, oh, this was actually a risky thing. But again, I'm so close to the end. I know what I know. And I knew that the OB that I had seen the day before in the office, I wanted to talk to her about the fluid because I had searched and I saw that the polyhydramnios could actually be a thing. You know, if your water breaks, there's the risk of cord prolapse, right? So I knew that that wasn't, you know, something that was completely, you know, to be ignored. So I wanted to talk to her more about that. So I humored him and I went in. Well, all the while I'm feeling these sensations like more and more consistently. And so they get me hooked up and I explain the situation. I said, I was just here yesterday, you know, not really for a reason, but I'm back now, also not really for a reason. And so they hook me up. Of course, everything looks good. But she's like, are you feeling these contractions? And I'm like, is that what they are? And, you know, I'm so excited. They were just cracking up because they were pretty. She's like, these are like pretty consistent and like big contractions. And I'm like, I just couldn't believe it. I was just so excited. My body was doing it. You know, I'd only ever at 39 weeks been cut off and never been given a chance. And all I needed, I guess, was a few extra days. So I'm just so excited that I'm, you know, having contractions and the nurses are laughing. They're like, we've never seen somebody so excited to have contractions. And so anyway, at that point, my OB comes in, the one who had been trying to get me to be induced. And she's plenty nice, but the one that said about if we did a scan at 40 weeks and 10 pounds, would you reconsider? So she said, Kelsey, you know what I'm going to say? She said, this is the second day you've been in here in 2 days. I'm like, yeah, but for nothing, you know?
And because you asked me to come in here.
Trying to like humor everyone and see, okay, yep, everything's fine. See, but again, I was having these contractions and they were like, as I was there, like picking up and she wanted to check me. And I said, okay, I'll let you check me because I'm having contractions I never have before. And I want to like kind of see, you know, what's going on. So I went to the bathroom and I had bloody show, which again, I had never had. So it's like, things are really happening. So I come out and I told her, I'm like, there's blood and I'm having contractions. And she's like, yay, let's check you. And I was 1 centimeter. So she was one of the OBs who was comfortable with a balloon. So she said, I'll tell you what, she's like, you've got a lot of fluid. Things are happening. She said, I can, you know, she's like, let's kind of work on moving things along. She said, I can do.
So she induced you?
Wanted to.
Okay.
So she's like, you know, let's get you in and I'll do the balloon and we can kind of get things going because you've got a lot of fluid and you've got, you know, it's time, Kelsey. And I'm like, okay. I said, well, I'm going to go home. And
good for you, girl.
And get my kids off with my mom and get, you know, my dog off. And I was like, and she just like sunk when I said that. I said, I promise I'll come back. I'm not going to run out. I'll come back just in a little while, like maybe this evening. But she said, okay, I'm here till 4. She said, and then it's another OB coming on who won't want to do the balloon. So just come in like before then. So of course I wait till like, you know, just exactly four. But as I was home, it just kept picking up and I started timing and the app is like, go to the hospital, go to the hospital. But I've also mm-hmm. this podcast that, you know, that happens. Mm-hmm. My husband's freaking out because he would see me like stop and pause and he's like, let's go, you know, let's get out of here. So I was grateful that everything maintained like through the car ride and I got there and contractions were still happening. My doula met there because I hear about people going too early and the contractions stop and then there's problems there. Yeah, things just kept happening. We got in a room. I mean, my doula was amazing. We were just hanging out, just laughing. I couldn't believe just how happy I felt to feel my body doing it after all these years of just, you know, your babies are too big and you can't do this. And then all of this pregnancy saying, you know, so it was just amazing. I definitely had my guard up. Like the nurse was talking about the IV and the monitors and I was worried, especially with being overweight. I was worried about a wireless monitor and I was just, you know, that happens. They can't get a good reading. And then they think baby's heart rate's dropping. I was just so worried about any reason because I knew that they would take it and run. So I was so grateful. The wireless monitoring worked perfectly. I was on my feet. Things just kept getting more intense, but I'm just like laughing and smiling through it all. My doula was amazing. Just, you know, it was just such a great vibe in the room. My nurses were amazing. And just every little thing that went right, I just, you know, embraced it and was so happy that this was happening. My water broke while I was like on a video call with my friend. And it was again, just like, oh my gosh, my water broke. That's never happened. And there was meconium in the water. So again, I'm like, oh no, you know, any mm-hmm. little thing. And I was quickly reassured. It was very light. It wasn't anything to be worried, you know, to worry about. So I labored and, you know, just stayed on my feet. My doula was amazing with suggesting things I never would have thought of or never would have thought that I would enjoy. I was in the shower at one point on a ball. They had this little wooden thing with a hole in it so that it keeps the ball from like slipping out and keeps the drain from plugging. And so I'm just listening to like my like guilty pleasure music while my husband's outside the shower eating a Pop-Tart, like laughing. It was just such a funny thing. And I was just so excited about it all. Things were really picking up. My water just kept breaking and breaking. And that, I mean, it was true. I had so much fluid. It just was just coming out and coming out. I couldn't believe how much there was. And then so I got into the bed on my side. My doula said, maybe like try to take a break and just, you know. And then I felt like it was like a water balloon in me. I could feel it burst. And it was like, just when I thought, surely I was out of fluid, it just gushed out. And then immediately it was like, oh my gosh, this is really intense. So I handled that for a while. I was, you know, squeezing the comb. I was, you know, working through contractions, but I tapped out at about 1 a.m., I'd say. So we got into the hospital around 4 and the time just flew. They came to do the epidural and he put it in and I just kept waiting for relief because I felt like the contractions, I just didn't have a break. They were kind of on top of each other. And it was one of those things, if I knew I was only going to have to do that for a short amount of time, but just not knowing how long, I just kind of felt like I was suffering through them at that point. And I wasn't trying to be a hero. I was just trying to avoid what I know sometimes happens, just trying to avoid interventions as much as I could. So I kept waiting for this relief because I'm like, I think I just need to rest. I feel like I'm close. The last I had been checked, I was 5 centimeters, but that was before the water broke and before, like, you know, struggling through contractions for a while. So I had no idea how dilated I was. So the relief never came. I was kind of waiting to just be able to relax and maybe take a nap, just like sometimes I hear. And I could still feel my legs. I could have walked around the room if I wanted. I kept pushing the button I don't know if it was in the wrong spot or what happened. I don't know if maybe there was something that was working, because instead of feeling like, you know, crushing, just defeated through the contractions, I was feeling like I can survive that, you know, I can get through them. So if there was just no resting, it was just still having to work through contractions. And then my doula at one point said, maybe we should call him in and have him, you know, redo it. But then I was in my head, well, what if he redoes it? And then I'm too numb and I can't push. So I just went through it. I'm so glad that I did, because it wasn't long after that I was checked and I was 8 centimeters. So my nurse kind of kept checking and just things were just, there was a lot going on down there, a lot like coming out. And eventually she checked me and she said, hi, buddy. And I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, she said, you want to feel him? And I got to like reach down and feel his head. And it was just also surreal. So then she had me do a practice push once I was dilated enough. And she's like, okay. She's like, I'm going to go make a phone call.
Wow. So, that's impressive.
When the OB came in, and I forgot to say that when I got to the hospital, the OB who was going to do the Foley balloon, I totally left this out. She checked me and I was already 2 centimeters. She said, your body is doing it on its own. She said, we're just going to let you go.
That was my question, Kelsey. I was wondering this whole time if they did anything to augment. There was no Pitocin. This was all you?
Yes. I can't believe I got there and I got the monitor placed and she came in and she checked and she said, you're 2 centimeters. We're just going to let you go. We're going to let you do your thing. And that was just music to my ears. Cause again, just knowing, you know, how things sometimes go. And also the OB coming on, I had told you, was really nervous about my plan. My husband and I joked that she like did something to calm herself down before she walked in. Cause she was just like, you know what? I'm going to do something crazy. I'm just going to just channel my inner midwife and do something crazy and just let you go and leave you alone. And my doula's like, good, please.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. I forgot to mention that is, you know, not only did I not need the induction, but then I had the OB kind of just surrendering and saying, you know what, go ahead, just let's do it. It's fine. So she literally did not like come in. Like she, I think, was just staying as far away as she could, just pretending it wasn't happening, I guess. And when the nurse called her, she came in and yeah, she got her gloves on. And I just kept waiting for something to happen still. And like, just, I'd been so scared by providers this whole time. So I'm like, okay. She instructed me on how to push and we did it through one contraction and his head came out and I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And then, so the second contraction, I did it again and the rest of him came out. It was unbelievable. It was like maybe 5 minutes from start to finish. My doula said it, described it as like butter. He was 9 pounds, 3 ounces.
Biggest baby. Okay.
Biggest baby, enormous head. I didn't have any tears. I had what the OB described as like grazes, like little spots that were bleeding. She put like 1 or 2 stitches like on like the walls from where there were these grazes. And just, I can't even describe. I mean, I was sobbing. I was like, we did it. And I'm just, he came right to my chest and to get to see him and just, it was unbelievable. Just, it all happened so fast and just going from not believing in my body and just going for these C-sections. And I'm so glad I didn't know what I was missing because in that moment, it's like, I probably could have done this before. And again, I didn't know what I didn't know and who knows how it would have gone, but it was just unbelievable to be in a normal room, to have him come out and just right to me where he belongs, you know, and getting to see him and like his cord still attached and he's crying. It just was such a beautiful moment. And I just couldn't believe that it had, after all of that, you know, here he was and it was beautiful. They asked, you know, about cutting the cord and we hadn't even discussed that, you know, and I was like, can I do it? I really want to do it. Like I wanted all the experiences that I could never have gotten in the OR. So I cut his cord. My doula got an awesome picture of that. I was considering having that be my picture for this podcast.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable. And I was just so happy too that OB was the one who was there because seeing how nervous she was and how I'm so glad that she got to experience. Look what you almost deterred me from doing, like, you know, just seeing how perfect it was. And now I'm hoping that if somebody comes to her in the future, she'll remember and say, hey, you know, we had this, this baby and it was just such a great experience. And I was just so grateful for every second. I couldn't believe how things ended up.
I am so happy for you. And like Tara was saying, I'm so impressed standing your ground, the way that you stood your ground after just constant, I'm going to call it nagging. They were just nagging on you and trying so hard to use the power of their knowledge that we know that they hold, right? We as beings, and it's not even just in the birth world, just humans, we have this thing where we have providers and we know that they've gone through extensive amount of schooling and trainings. And so it's sometimes easy, as you said, you spiraled when you got back to spiral and be like, wow, they're just all pushing this really hard. Maybe I should listen, right? Tara, have you experienced this within supporting your clients or just your own personal experience?
You mean the like the pushback from the providers?
Yeah, the pushback and then the for us, like, wait, should we doubt our intuition? Oh. Should we doubt what we're feeling and go with what they're saying because they know more?
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's the hardest thing because you hire them. Like you said, with your first provider, you trusted her. You'd known her since you were young. You've built this trust. She's gone to school. It's so hard to stand up against that as just a consumer, as a person who cares about the health of your baby and your family. But then the multiple times that you had to stand up for yourself, even in small things like not getting the IV, not getting the cervical exam, those are not small things. You were protecting yourself from having more of that pushback. And I am amazed. We struggle with that as doulas too, because we're helping advocate for our clients. And it sounds like your doula was a rock for you and a place to feel validated and heard. I'm so glad you had her.
Me too. I say to my husband, no offense, you know, you're great, but what would we have done without our doula? I mean, she was unbelievable. Just even bringing like just the positive energy and just having like, Yeah. You and I are so nervous and we're so worked up. We're, you know, third time parents, but our first time doing any of this. And we both would have just kind of like, my husband wouldn't have really known how to, you know, he's never seen it before. My doula, she's done this so many times. And so she was right in there with the massaging and the side lying. And she did that thing. She called it shaking the apples.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. But Kelsey, you like, it's against all odds. I just think it's amazing because we talk about the power of oxytocin and feeling safe and not having stress hormones going on. And you had all of that. You should be so proud of your body, like coming in the nick of time and just proving against all of this, I'm just going to go ahead and birth this baby, and a bigger baby than your other two, which is such a triumphant moment.
Seriously.
His head was 15 inches. So that was another thing, because they had talked about his head circumference being off the chart. So that was another thing I had been searching, is, you know, people who've had the big head circumference. So those groups, this podcast and just groups and having access to so many stories and people overcoming all of these obstacles, because every time I came up against something, I had heard it before. I said, oh, you know, this is something that I've heard time and time again with these stories. Because they make you feel like you're the only one with a big baby and, oh, this is a problem. But it's like, no, they're saying this to so many people. And, you know, it was just amazing going into this being so informed and motivated and having that confidence that I never would have had. So I just am so grateful for this podcast and for all the information.
Well, thank you so much. It's one of the coolest things, I think, not only just the VBAC, but to see where you came from the beginning of, we're not having kids. Okay, we're having kids. Okay, this is what I'm thinking. I'm kind of scared of this. Let's do this. Okay, doctor said this. Let's do this to this. I mean, you came. So talking about the pendulum, right? Like what that provider was talking about, like you came from one side over here to not even wanting kids or wanting a vaginal birth to swinging so far to the other side and advocating so hard for yourself and standing your ground. Like when we say that you should be proud, like it's like, I'm shouting it, like be proud of yourself, girl. You are incredible and you are such a great example. And women of strength, if you are listening right now, I want you to know that you can be just like Kelsey. You do not have to be bullied. You do not have to be nagged on every single time. Know what's right. Know your gut, know your heart, do what you need to do, and you can do it. You can do it. And it is hard. And I know it's hard. It is not easy, but it is possible. Like, girl, you're amazing. And I thank you so much for sharing your story today and empowering all the women of strength that are coming after you and needing the same encouragement that you needed years ago when you're not even years ago. How old's your baby?
So he is 4 months old okay, now.
4 months, yeah, a year ago when you were listening. I mean, really, so, so amazing. Thank you so much. And Tara, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. And I couldn't agree more with your advice. Get your partners educated. Create that true dream team.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Kelsey.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.